Getting Fixed, a novel by Myrna Milani, read by Myrna Milani, all rights reserved. Chapter 15. We must do something about David, Callie told the cats one sleepless night, holding the engraved wedding invitation announcing his and Marilyn's wedding in exactly 1 month. When she first received it, she had tried to convince herself that David and Marilyn would never miss her, which surely would have been the case had they not designated her the nuptial carriage driver. However, because they had, no amount of cowardliness on her part could obscure the fact that she couldn't delay telling him the truth any longer. "Hello, David?" She spoke tentatively when he answered the phone. "It's Callie. I'm not interrupting anything, am I?" "What? No. Marilyn's gone to see her family to go over some last-minute changes in the reception menu." He stifled a yawn, and she realized it was after midnight California time. "How are you doing, Callie? It's been a long time since you've written." She knew she should apologize for waking him and then participate in the obligatory preliminary small talk, but she could not. Instead, she blurted out, I can't come to your wedding." Then completely broke down and told him about Billy dying. His immediate response reminded her what a good person he was and why she would always love him. "I can be there tomorrow afternoon and stay with you for a week or so to help you through this. I know Marilyn would understand." Callie wasn't nearly so sure that Marilyn would understand, but his willingness to do that made her cry even harder. "Callie, please let me come," he pleaded. "You shouldn't have to go through this alone. Not after what happened to your parents." "I'm all right," she told him between sobs. "Are you sure?" He didn't sound convinced. "Do you have friends there?" "Maybe not quite as good as you, David," she assured him, snuggling deeper into her warm nest of cats, "but good enough." After thanking him for being so understanding, Callie slept fitfully until the alarm went off 2 hours later. As the days passed, fewer and fewer people came to visit Billy. They said they didn't because he was often asleep when they arrived and they didn't want to bother him. But while Billy did sleep a lot, Callie knew that the fact that it was taking him so long to die bothered them a lot more than waking him up. As time went on, she could only count on a handful of the original group of volunteers for help, too. "I think it's great that Billy's hanging on so long. I really do," Justine had confided when she asked Callie to remove her name from the list of volunteers. "But it's really depressing waiting for someone to die, you know?" Callie had nodded her head sympathetically, but the truth was she didn't know. Until then, all the other important people in her life had died or disappeared so suddenly she'd felt like a spectator at a magic show. "You need to deal with your feelings about your parents, your Uncle George, and Zed," Alicia had told her many times during their years of sessions. "You can't keep running away from them." But everyone had died or disappeared before Callie had a chance to figure out how she felt about them, leaving these black holes inside of her. And then she ran away from Alicia, too. So staying with Billy day after day, privy to his most intimate thoughts and feelings, and attending his most basic needs didn't bother her like it did the others. Billy gave her time to become accustomed to life without him. They shared so many good memories, she knew she could fill any void that arose after he was gone, and that part of him would always be with her. She appreciated that. Maybe he'd give her enough that she could fill some of the other holes in her life, too. By now, Billy had lost so much weight that both Curly and Callie could sit on the bed with him, and he tired so easily that they did most of their communicating with her eyes and facial expressions rather than hands. To amuse him, she held up pictures for him to see and, thankfully, never lost the ability to select those that would make him smile. The morning she brought him a cyclamen in full bloom from home, he felt up to signing for the first time in days. "Pretty." Then, "You do Nana for me?" "What?" she replied. "When the time comes, will you help me like you help Nana?" Even if Callie hadn't deciphered what his thin, trembling fingers conveyed, she easily read it in his eyes. But she didn't know what to say. He pointed to her, then crossed his heart, screwed up his face as if in pain, and then pointed to himself. "You promised you wouldn't let me hurt." She nodded. Yes, I did. You didn't lie to me, did you? She shook her head emphatically. No, I would never lie to you. Good. Where will I go when I die? She pointed to her heart. Here. Forever. What about my body? When Callie sorted Billy's photos, she deliberately removed the ones of his parents' funerals. Now she got these out and showed them to him. Do you want this, like your parents? He shook his head. No, Chucky. Want to sit on shelf with Bernice and Howard. Callie couldn't help laughing at his remark. When she was arranging things on the bookshelves he built in her living room, she had asked him to put the urn with her parents' ashes on the top shelf for her. He asked her what it was, she told him, and he wanted to look inside. She had wanted to look inside herself many times, mainly to make sure Chucky hadn't substituted buckshot for Bernice's bra, but she could never summon the nerve. But that day she summoned it for Billy. When they opened the urn, the disc of melted metal gleamed through the gray ash. Billy smiled and touched the metal. Good party, he signed. She started to tell him that it hadn't been a party, but changed her mind. If he liked that explanation, what difference did it make? Will you sit on the shelf with Bernice and Howard, too? Billy's hand signals brought Kelly back to the present. I don't know. I've thought about asking someone to sprinkle my ashes on the beach. He thought about that and nodded his head. Nice. If your ashes go to the beach, could mine go with them? She smiled and kissed him on the cheek. Of course. My ashes would never go to the beach without yours. He smiled, too, and held her hand with one hand and curled Curly's curls with the other until he fell asleep again. As usual, the next morning Callie left the cats enough food and water to tide them over in case she didn't make it home that night. Although the killing frost had long come and gone and the nighttime temperatures hovered in the high 20s, the cat room's south-facing windows, a long string of sunny days, and the house's excellent insulation had precluded the use of the space heater. You can thank Howard for that, she told the cats as she fluffed their pillows and picked up their toys. Insulation was about the only thing in life, besides hunting and fishing, that had excited Howard Shackelford. When the energy crisis hit in the 70s, he became convinced that Arabs or Texans, whom he considered indistinguishable, fully intended to freeze New Englanders to death. This led to an obsession with R values, numbers that indicated the insulating effect of a particular substance in some incomprehensible way. All Howard knew was that the higher the R value, the better, and he had the highest R-valued insulation he could find blown into every nook and cranny of the old house. Next, he had all the windows replaced with top-of-the-line energy-conserving ones, had the wood stove installed in the main house, and added the propane space heater to heat the two rooms between the house and barn when necessary. As was his habit, Howard originally planned to do all the work himself, thereby saving much money. However, if his job at the mill required any manual dexterity, it apparently wasn't the kind necessary to do most household chores. Once he beat a 5-inch hole in the wall when he tried to hang a picture of Mount Fujiyama for Bernice, then repaired it with a watermelon-sized blob of plaster, then lost interest before he could sand it smooth enough to paint. During his next fishing trip, Venus took down the off-kilter Fujiyama because it rocked so violently on its uneven perch. It made me think of earthquakes, not tranquility, she told Callie as she stood on the couch in her gauzy dress, eyeing the lump on the wall with hammer in hand. At first, Callie thought her mother intended to flatten the lump with a hammer. Instead, Venus removed the velvet tapestry of the Buddha contemplating his navel she had been wearing as a cape, and carefully positioned it on the wall such that his navel covered the center of the lump. Once satisfied with the hanging's position, she asked Callie to hold it for her while she nailed it to the wall using a prodigious number of very long nails. Don't you think this gives him a spiritually moving three-dimensional quality? Venus asked her daughter after she stepped back to admire her work. Callie thought the Buddha looked like he had a very large tumor, but she nodded in agreement. Howard said nothing at all when he saw it, but she suspected that his own and his wife's appalling display of manual ineptitude led him to hire someone to make the energy-conserving repairs to the house. "Let the bastards drown in their oil," he announced with passive satisfaction when they concluded their first winter without ever once turning on the furnace. Of course, Callie now kept the furnace set on low because, unlike Howard, she didn't have Bernice to tend the wood stove all day and didn't want the pipes to freeze in her absence. Because that day's forecast heralded the arrival of a polar air mass, she also turned on the space heater in the cat room for the first time and even invited the outdoor cats inside to keep warm. "You guys be good and no fighting," she admonished them as she set the cat room thermostat at a cozy 72 degrees, hoping the warmth would cause them to snooze rather than spar. As the kittens grew older, more fights occurred, and she had added treating bite wounds to her daily do list. This also inspired her to put building some sort of outdoor feline activity center on her list of projects for the coming year. "Why not let them out?" Billy once again asked when she told him about her plans. She shrugged because she still didn't know what to say about that either. She knew the cats would be a lot happier roaming free, no matter how luxurious their quarters, but she still couldn't bear the thought of losing any of them. If anything, those feelings were stronger than ever now that she was losing Billy. Every time she thought of this, she could hear Alicia shouting, "For God's sake, Callie, you're turning your cats into totems!" And Alicia was probably right. But Callie didn't think she had planned it that way. It just happened. Now she had to deal with that, too. Or she would, when she had time. You've been listening to an excerpt from Getting Fixed, a novel by Myrna Milani, read by Myrna Milani. For more information about this and other books by the author, please visit mmilani.com. The song Irritations into Pearls was composed and performed by Jeff Firestone. For more information about Jeff and his music, please contact him at retromusic@verizon.net. Thanks for listening.